Hey, let's pray. God, thank you for today. Thank you for the ability to think about things that we might not think about in other environments, and also the opportunity to hear things that we're not going to hear in other environments. Even if we don't like all that's said today or like all of what is thought today, I'm praying that you would teach us in a very significant way, right down to our core, right down to our gut. I pray that you help us to see the reality that's right before our eyes. And I pray that you'd help me to communicate your heart clearly. That's all I want, God, is communicate your heart. So if you would do that for us today, and especially for me, I would appreciate it muchly. In your name I pray, amen. Amen. Muchly. That's a word, right? It should be, muchly. Well, there could be some very annoyed people in here right now after having just done that song. Very annoyed people. We are in the midst of a political season, in the midst of election season coming up quick. And one of the lines in that song is that one of the lies is that Jesus was not a white middle class Republican. Some of us in here said, woo! But if we would have said Jesus wasn't a black middle class Democrat, some other people might have said, woo! We're not trying to portray Jesus or God's values as represented in any one political party. In fact, what I see, the longer I get to know Jesus, the longer I read the Bible, is that Jesus' values aren't seen fully in any political party or any political system. That's what we're going to look at today. That's what we're going to conclude with today. And that song struck a chord within me when I first heard it a number of years ago that said, man, any kingdom, any system, any worldview, any team that is about itself or not about what God is about is ultimately going to be met with frustration. Because I believe any team, any system, any kingdom that isn't centered on love is ultimately going to be fruitless. And the only system, the only king that's centered on love is Jesus. Well, he said, well, love, what does that mean? There are a lot of people who believe different things are about love, or a lot of different camps are about love. Here's what I mean by love. I mean love is when you freely receive whatever comes your way, and then you freely empty yourself. When you're not in a transactional economy, if I'll do this for you, if you do that for me, but I'll freely take whatever comes my way, and I will freely give you anything that I have, even down to, if need be, my life. This is what Jesus said. Jesus said, freely you have received, freely give. It's one of the reasons why here at Crossroads, we don't sell anything. I've never sold anything. In fact, if you want to know more about our financial principles or what we're doing budgetary-wise this year, you can go on crossroads.net and find a podcast about that. But one of our values here has never been to sell anything. No coffees, no CDs, no selling admission to seminars, no selling anything, no Bibles, no nothing. Not that selling anything is wrong, it builds a strong economy, but the kingdom economy is built on love. It's not built on quid pro quo. It's not built on tit for tat. It's built on love, which means I freely receive what comes my way and I freely empty myself. Well, let's get right down to business. Some of you are wondering, hey, this is political season. This is political season right now. I'm getting a lot of questions, who do you endorse? Does Crossroads have an official endorsement? Brian, how are you going to vote? How does this all work? Because, the stakes are very high this year, very, very high. And so for me, I just feel like it's my obligation to say where I'm going is to the way of Jesus. That's the way I'm going. I'm not going to McCain. I'm not going to Barack Obama. Here's what I mean by that. I am trying to be a little funny. It was supposed to be funnier than that actually was. Trying to build you up to crescendo. He said, oh my goodness, he's going to do politics? No, we're not. Crossroads is a political-free zone. We don't have politics here. Now, we'll talk about certain issues, but when it comes down to endorsing candidates or parties, none of them ever have or ever will completely represent who Jesus is. It just isn't. This is the first year for me that I'm actually undecided. I'm one of those undecided voters. It's because I've come to a place where I'm just frustrated with politics. I'm actually frustrated with our country. And I'm starting to believe that maybe I've placed too much hope in our country. Maybe I've placed too much hope in my politicians, our politicians. In fact, if I place hope in anything other than Jesus, Slavery will be my end. That's the big idea here today. If I place hope, my hope is in anything other than Jesus, any kingdom other than Jesus, slavery will be the result. Frustration will be the result. It always is. See, we've been looking this series that there's two different realities. There's the way that this world operates, is the system of this world, and then there's the reality the way Jesus wants to operate, the countercultural kingdom that's coming in our world and pushing against it the other way. And this world, the systems of this world, the normal way that you and I will be a way that doesn't bring us life, it's a way that brings us death. It is not a way that brings us joy. It's a way that brings us pain. It's not a way that brings us no regret. It brings us remorse. It's not a way that brings us hopefulness and loving for the future. It brings us depression and procrastination. That's the normal things of this world. And whatever it is, it will bother us. Where the counterforce of Jesus comes against all the systems of this world and comes at us with love. And anything that is not aligned with Jesus will ultimately bring slavery, will ultimately bring frustration. It will ultimately bring us boxed into this wardrobe. It'll bring us to a place where we think that this is where we want to live, this is where we want to reside, but we're actually boxed in. We can go nowhere. We have no mobility. And it's interesting that whatever your kingdom is, whatever our kingdom is, we'll always find reasons to justify our kingdom. We've looked at various examples of what our kingdom is. Some of us, our king and our kingdom is sexual conquest, or our king and our kingdom is money, or our king and our kingdom is body beautiful, or our king and our kingdom is family. And you say, no, how? Family? If that's not Jesus, how can my family bring me bondage? Because isn't family good? Yeah, family's good. Money can be good too. You know, you're having a good sex life in the right context can be good too. But what happens? As soon as we place our hope in those things, we become enslaved to those things. So you can have family as your most important thing, and then as soon as you don't get married when you think you should get married, all of a sudden you're in slavery, right? All of a sudden you're out here in the atrium and you can't look at anybody that's your opposite sex without wondering, is that the one? Is that the one? All of a sudden, when family is your kingdom, it's the most important thing, all of a sudden one of your kids starts doing something they shouldn't do, and all of a sudden your world starts crumbling because family is most important. Or if you get old enough and your kids start moving out, all of a sudden you're in bondage, you're an empty nester, and you don't know how to function life because everything has been about family. Family isn't wrong, but making it your kingdom, making it be the king that is the ever-present reality in your life will lead to slavery, will lead to depression. If money is, you're in bondage, you're in slavery right now, aren't you? Right now. If it's money, if that's your king, you're in slavery and bondage right now. Now, we are equal opportunity offenders here at Crossroads, and I guarantee you, someone's going to be offended right now. In fact, maybe everybody's going to be offended right now. I find it very interesting. This is just something you think about. You might not agree with me, but I'd like you to follow this reasoning as it relates to what your kingdom might be and the emotions that might stir inside of you. I find it very interesting that as some candidates have talked about dealing with the medical condition and medical reform, the immediate thing that comes from many people in our country is socialized medicine. No socialized medicine. I don't want any socialized medicine. And generally, the people who jump from we need medical reform to socialized medicine are generally those people who have health insurance. That's generally what it is. And we're all concerned about socialized medicine. And we think philosophically, a government can't put money into medicine. And maybe they should, maybe they shouldn't. Yet, if your kingdom is money and you're at 30% of your net worth or 40%, what do you want right now? You want socialized banking right now. That's what you want. You want the government to take all of a sudden it's not good enough, like let the market shake itself out and, you know, let the strong survive, because now it's your money. So now, hey, you know, no, not a trillion to medicine over there, but yeah, definitely a trillion into the banking industry to keep me solvent right now. And I was talking with my uncle about this today, and he was like, yes, he was agreeing with everything I said. And then he talked about how he really believes the government needs to put money into Chevrolet and GM and kind of just make that whole thing go right. And I said, now it's interesting, you know, you're socialized medicine, socialized banks, so you want socialized auto industry too. And he said, well, it's different. And I said, well, how? He said, well, that's how I earn my living. That's how he lives in Detroit. He lives in Detroit, and he's able to give me the statistics of, hey, one of every six workers in our country, says, earns their money through the automotive industry, so we need to do that. Oh, here's all I'm saying. All I'm saying is this. Whatever your kingdom is, whatever you're passionate about, you will always be able to justify resources going into it. Always will. You just whatever it is. And the kingdom of Jesus is not as much about resources coming in, though it does come in. We're going to talk about that today. It's about what is the resources going out, specifically the love. What is love? What does it look like? Let's go back to that verse that we looked at when we started the whole series off in Matthew chapter 16. Jesus is interacting with his buddy Simon Peter, also known as Simon, also known as Peter. And he said, who do people say that I am? And here's what Peter says. He says, you are the Christ, the Son of the living God. Jesus replied, blessed are you, Simon, son of Jonah, for this was not revealed to you by man, but by my Father in heaven. And I tell you that you're Peter, and on this rock I will build my church, and the gates of Hades will not overcome it. I will give you the keys of the kingdom of heaven. Whatever you bind on earth will be bound in heaven, and whatever you loose on earth will be loosed in heaven. Peter declares that Jesus, you are king. We talked about that first week. Christ, Kria, one who is anointed, one who is king. I say you're the king. And Jesus says, hey, you are on to something right now. You are seeing a different reality. I'm going to give you the keys of the kingdom. I'm going to give you the ability to cause things to happen up in heaven, things to happen up there that will happen down here. You'll bring heaven down here. I'm going to cause you to be able to do things, you and a whole team of people, to do things that stop things happening down here that shouldn't be happening out down here. And God actually gets involved with that up there or wherever he resides. That is the kingdom. It's all in an ever-present reality. I'm going to give you the keys to the kingdom. You think, like, if you're Peter right now, you're going to be feeling, like, really good. You're like, oh, man, this is how good is this, man? I answered the test right. He asked me who he said he was, and I gave him the right answer. And now he's giving me keys to the kingdom. He's, like, telling me I'm awesome. He's telling me all that. He's just on cloud nine. He's like thinking to himself, life could just end right now. Let's just all go home. No more meeting, because right now I am the man, I am the winner. Unfortunately for him, the interaction continues to go on. Now, from that time on, here's what it says in chapter 21. Now, from that time on, Jesus began to explain to his disciples that he must go to Jerusalem and suffer many things at the hands of the elders, chief priests, and teachers of the law, and that he must be killed and on the third day be raised to life. Peter took him aside and began to rebuke him. That means, like, speak trash to him. Say, no. Never, Lord, he said. This shall never happen to you. Jesus turned and said to Peter, get behind me, Satan. You are a stumbling block to me, and you do not have in mind the things of God, but the things of men. Boy, talk about a twist of fate. One moment, you're the man, you're Peter, you're rock, yes, you're awesome, awesome. No, now you're Satan. You're actually Satan. That's why I say Satan. Boy, talk about a little flip. He goes from the rock, that's what Peter means, rock, the rock to Satan. Wow, how could that be? How could that be? The reason it is because he, in this moment, is getting in the way of the plan that Jesus wants to interact. Now, what I'm going to say from here on out, and also the whole time, I understand not all of us agree with this. Some of us have already tuned us out because you heard me say something politically you don't like. So I understand that people are not going to like everything I'm going to say today, and I understand that some of us are not even going to understand everything I'm going to say today, because this is the thread that runs throughout the entire Bible, and if you're not exposed to this at all, you might not be able to pick it up in our remaining 30-some minutes or so. But I want to tell you what I'm going to talk about the rest of our time today is the most important thing you'll ever be faced with. I'll tell you right now, what I'm going to talk about today, take away every single decision you'll ever make in your life, take away every single belief you'll have, this one right here, this one, whatever you do about this one, this is the deal breaker. This is the game breaker. This is the one that opens a new reality to you. This is the one that opens hope to you, or this is the one that keeps you locked away in a chest, locked away in constriction. This is it. And you could say, I'm wrong, okay? So I'll give you the freedom to say that I'm wrong, but I'm just telling you, if you want to ever understand the Bible, say what it's about, it's this today, period. This is the central theme today. It is the theme of love. And what is love? It's freely giving and freely receiving. And Jesus says to Peter, he says, you know, there's going to come a day. I'm going to go to Jerusalem, and I'm going to freely give myself up. I'm going to freely give myself. I'm going to be tortured. I'm going to be beaten. I'm going to be nailed to a cross. At this moment, he doesn't know that he's going to be nailed to a cross. That's, I don't believe that's fully in focus for him at this moment, but he does know that his end is death. That's what he knows. He knows his end is death. He says, right now, I'm telling you, I'm going to freely give myself. I am going to die. I'm going to be suffered. I'm going to be placed in a box. I'm going to be placed in a tomb. I'm going to die. And Peter's hearing this going, oh, no, this is a bad plan. This is a really, really bad. This is bad. It's bad. It's bad. It's really, this is not a good idea. I don't know exactly why Peter's thinking this. Maybe it's because Peter has started to build a kingdom that's counterfeit to this plan. Maybe he's building a kingdom where he's sort of the man who has all the answers, and he doesn't understand this one, so now he doesn't like this because he doesn't understand this. Some of us, that's our kingdom, to know everything. As soon as something comes your way you don't know, you disqualify it. Like today, I'll tell you something, you go, oh, no. Well, maybe if you didn't know it, maybe it's still true. Maybe Jesus's or Peter's kingdom is having Jesus by his side to be his good luck charm. Maybe he just likes Jesus being around because he knows, man, if I ever get hurt, I got Jesus to heal me. Maybe his kingdom is having his best buddy, Jesus, always be there to encourage him. For whatever reason, Jesus being removed from the world, from his life, he thinks is an awful plan. And Jesus says, at this moment right now, you are exhibiting hellish character qualities. You are exhibiting hellish character qualities. You are acting as the one who is the head of the kingdom that I'm warring against. That kingdom is called the kingdom of the ways of this world. It's also called hell. It's also called ruled by what Jesus called the prince of this world. His name is Satan or the devil or Lucifer. Anytime you have a value, anytime you have a belief, when you have an action that is not oriented towards love, and it's not something Jesus would do, you are stepping into the kingdom of the world. You are stepping under the tutelage and under the mastery of the devil, of Satan. And when Peter says, this idea of you pouring out yourself in love, this idea of you willingly giving yourself, this is a bad idea, Jesus says, right now you're like Satan, right now. Right now, because Satan was a guy that never understood giving up himself. He only wanted to gain. He only wanted more of what he didn't have. He wanted God's position. He only wanted more and more. And right now, with you not being on the love plan, you right now are lining up with the accumulation plan. You're lining up with the evil one himself. See, Jesus wants to unlock. The king unlocks the enslaved. The king unlocks the enslaved. If your kingdom isn't of Jesus' world, you're in bondage. And where you are, Jesus doesn't look at you and go, ha, 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 you're there, you're there. No, Jesus says, no, my will is to come and unlock you. My will is to come and jump into you. My will is to give of myself in love. The king unlocks the enslaved. He's a different kind of king, Jesus is. He's not the kind of king who expands his territory by grabbing people and throwing them into prison. He's not the kind of king who expands his territory by taking from people that which is good and honorable. He's a king who jumps into people's lives who are in bondage, who have been hurt, who have been beaten, who have been enslaved. And he says, I want to free you. I want to free you. I want to expand my territory of love, and it starts in your life. Starts in your life. I read a newspaper article this last week that has been somewhat controversial. I don't know if you've ever heard of it. Have you heard of a football player by the name of Trevor Wilkerie? Ever heard of this guy? Here he is right here, Trevor Wilkerie. He plays football at Mesa State, and he's got his hand up right there. It's because he just had an operation on his hand. He's a senior offensive lineman for a team that's doing pretty well this year, and while he was blocking somebody, his finger got caught up in a pad or something like that, and that basically got mushed, and bones started sticking out. And he went in to have it operated on. So they said, we can operate on this. It's just that it's going to take you a year to recover. So your season, your senior season, is over. And he immediately said, according to the press reports, what if you just cut it off? And they said, well, we could do that. And they cut off the dude's finger. They cut the guy's finger off. Now, and this is him right here with his finger all bandaged up. And apparently, this guy had some incredible bond with his teammates. And he would say to his teammates things like, man, I would die for you. And he was later on quoted as saying, if I tell my teammates I'm going to die for them, I'm a real hypocrite if I don't lose my finger for them. And he goes on and he says this. He says, If I had left it on, I know I would have regretted that the rest of my life. This team is too good, and there's too much love. There was no way I was missing out. Trevor Wilkery, whatever you say. Now, depending on how you look at this, this could be twisted. I mean, if you look at it from the way of, hey, it's just a game, why would you lose your finger for the rest of your life? Yeah, it could be kind of twisted. I wouldn't lose my ear for checkers. You know, there's certain things that... all analogies eventually break down, okay? But let me just look at it from one interesting way. I think it's pretty inspiring whenever anybody gives them themselves, even if it's their pinky. I think it's pretty interesting. And if you've ever been in a team sport context, there is a magic that happens in the midst of team. I can understand totally why he went where he went in doing this. I can really understand that because you're caught up and camaraderie and a purpose, and might I even say love for a team, and when you're caught up in that, giving of yourself, your pinky, might begin to make sense. Now again, I'm not sure that I would endorse this, or if my son has this happen, I'm not sure I want him to lop off his pinky, analogies eventually break down, but here's what I know. Many of us don't understand this at all because you don't understand love. You don't understand giving. It's all quid pro quo in your kingdom. It's all, what do you do for me and I'll do it for you. Let's meet halfway. The ultimate purpose of love is to give. The ultimate purpose of love is to empty yourself. And what Trevor does here in cutting off his pinky is nowhere near what happened when Jesus not just cut off his pinky, he cut off his life. He cut off his life. He went to Jerusalem, allowed himself to be arrested, beaten, put up on a cross, nailed to a cross, lost his life, placed into a tomb, dead. Why did he do this? He did this out of love. Now you say, now love, how in the world is this love? I mean, what possibly did this accomplish? One of the things that this accomplished is that as you and I go after our own kingdoms, we start accruing a holiness debt. As you go after your family kingdom, your sex kingdom, your career ladder kingdom, your whatever kingdom, as the natural course of those things, you will be about yourself and not about God, and you will naturally be unloving, and you will naturally do things and be about things that God doesn't want you to be about. And we accrue a holiness debt. We accrue something that we can't pay off. Part of why we're in such financial crisis today, why it's so difficult for us, is that many of us or our country, we've accumulated debts that now we have no way that we can see ever paying it off. We just don't see how it's going to work, and that's what's stressful. We don't know how in the world we're going to get out of this, or many people don't know how we're going to get out of this. And this is the way it happens in the spiritual realm. We accrue this debt of all of these things that bother God, and then we just expect it to evaporate and go away. And no, God says, no, I am out of love going to jump in. I am going to give myself. Instead of you getting spanked, instead of you having to work off your sin, instead of you having whatever, I'm going to lay down my life. I'm going to give my life. I am going to turn it over. I'm going to lay it down. This is what we see throughout the entire Bible is this imagery of slavery. I'm going to show you a bunch of verses here on slavery to show you. This is not just a couple things that are taken out of context, but the default in your life, if you don't decide something else, you will be a slave. You will be in bondage to fear. You will be in bondage to joylessness. You'll be in bondage to paranoia. You'll be in bondage to wondering how you're going to make it through the next day. You will not encounter love or encounter hope or live joylessly if you serve anything or in any other kingdom other than the kingdom of God. Here's some examples of this, at least what it says in the Bible. It says this, they will come to their senses and escape from the trap of the devil who has taken them captive to do his will. Some of the traps that the devil lays are good-looking traps. That's why we stick our toe in them. Lust. It's a good-looking trap. That's why we do it. Greed. It's a good-looking trap. That's why we do it. It's just that it never is enough. Here's another one. Jesus, who gave himself for our sins to rescue us from the present evil age according to the will of our God and Father. Rescue. Who needs rescued? Not a person who is understandably flawed in need of a few helpful spiritual principles. That's a quote from a guy named Larry Crabb. This is the way most of us operate. We say, hey, I'm understandably flawed and just in need of a few helpful principles. No, man, when you're going after your own kingdom or outside of any kingdom other than the kingdom of God, you are enslaved. You are locked away. You cannot earn your way to God. That's not the economy that God operates in. Here's another one. So also, when we were children, we were in slavery under the basic principles of the world. He's not talking here about when you're 4 years old. He's talking about when you spiritually are not seeing things the way they are, but you're spiritually childish, you're in slavery. What does God do? What does God do with the way that you have hurt his daughter? What's he to do with that? What does God do with the way you've hurt his son? What is God to do with the way in which you and I have managed our finances, not care about people who die every 3.5 seconds of poverty? It's his kids dying. What's he to do? What is God to do with the carnage and the wreckage of the choices that I've made in my life that have affected people? What is that? Man, I think about one of my biggest regrets ever, speaking of football, was John, I won't give his last name because you might find on the internet and then come and kill me because he's probably enslaved to how I put him in slavery. He was a little kid I coached when I was coaching football, and a little junior high kid, and I was enslaved to winning. That's what I was about. Yes, I believed in Jesus. Yes, I believe if I died, I was going to heaven. But still, I was enslaved. I was enslaved to winning. And so what that meant for me is coaching these junior high kids is that only the best would get in. And if I ever saw you loafing, you would never get in, even if we were up 40-7. And John seemed to me to always be loafing. And I was always sending him to the hill. Run the hill. Run the hill. And he'd run the hill, go up and down the hill. Had him for 2 years, 7th grade, 8th grade. Last game. End of the game, his 8th grade year, he comes up to me on the sideline just crying. He's crying. I'm looking at him and saying, John, what's going on? He said, Coach, I never got in for 2 years. I never got in. All of a sudden, I just like, oh, gosh. When I think, all of a sudden, it was like spiritual clarity. My goodness. I don't care if the kid loafed or not. After 2 years, he deserved to get in on the kickoff team at least once. It's crazy. It's utterly crazy. I believe that I've given him a pain that he carries around with him for the rest of his life. I believe that. I believe I've contributed to causing him paranoia over leaders. I bet he's trying to still earn the approval of some male role model because me screwed him over. That's the best way to put it. I put it even more harshly if it was just you, me, and my back deck. I carry that around. He carries that around. I mean, there's stuff that, what do I do with that? Just go coach all the time and make sure everybody gets in? No, there's a debt. There's a debt that I've got to look to Jesus to alleviate and just trust that he's going to be okay with it. He's going to forgive me and give me love. Here's some more. Here's some more right here. Since you died with Christ, the basic principles of this world, why as though you still belong to it, do you submit to its rules? Here's one. You know, some of us in here, you say, oh, I know where you're going, Brian. This is called that good old time gospel hour. You're going to talk about receiving Jesus. Yeah, I've done that. But you know, you may have done that, and we're all going to have an opportunity to do that today. But you're submitting to the world's rules, aren't you? You're submitting. You're freaked out about the economy. I tell you, if you're freaked out of the economy, you are submitting to the world's rules. It's telling you, you should be. If you're freaked out over whether or not your candidate is going to get elected or not, you are submitted to the world's rules, which will tell you if what you want to have happen and who you want to get elected doesn't get elected, then America's going to hell in a handbasket. That's the world's rules. Make you be afraid, very afraid, paranoid, that God really can't rule a country or do what mortal people can't do. Make you be afraid. That's the basic, and submit to its rules. What rules are you submitting to that Jesus stands against and says, no, that won't bring you life. No, that won't bring you joy. What does is when you die. What does is when you freely give of yourself in love. Here's another one. There it is. Yeah, I thought there was. It is for freedom that Christ has set us free. Stand firm then and do not let yourselves be burdened again by yoke of slavery. Why has Jesus come? He hasn't come to make you moral. He hasn't come to make you believe all the right things. He hasn't come so that you're part of an activist organization. He hasn't come so you have all the right spiritual ideals. He has come for you to be free. He's come for you to get out of the closet. He's come for you to get out of bondage to the basic elemental principles of the world. And whenever we go back to the way the world operates, we burden ourselves with the yoke of slavery. We step into a realm that bogs us down and hurts us. As soon as we think that the future depends on me, as soon as we think that God can't do whatever he wants, as soon as we think it's this or that that's going to bring me fulfillment and that this or that isn't Jesus, we bring slavery on ourselves. We weigh ourselves down. So what happens with Jesus? How does he do us? How does he do this? What is the key? The key is love. Love is the key. Love's the key. Love is the key. Hebrews 2, 14 to 15 speaks about how love is the key to unlocking your slavery. Love is the key to unlocking you to hope. In Hebrews 2, chapter 14 to 15, it says this. Since the children have flesh and blood, he too shared in their humanity so that by his death, he might destroy him who holds the power over death. That is the devil. And free those who all their lives were held in slavery by their fear of death. Are you afraid of dying? Are you afraid of going bankrupt? Are you afraid of having a divorce? Are you afraid of not having a kid? Are you afraid of not getting married? Are you afraid of getting a divorce? Are you afraid of gaining 20 more pounds? are you whatever you're afraid of in all likelihood has you in some sort of bondage. And it shows that you're searching after something that is not love. Jesus is love. You say, this seems so simple. Jesus comes and lays down his life and his goodness is transferred to my account. All my trash is transferred to him. That's so simple. If it was that simple, why would the quote unquote devil have this plan? Because the devil doesn't even understand love. He doesn't understand it. It's like talking to somebody about email who lived in 1920. Don't understand it. Never saw it, never conceptualized it. It's like talking to the Grecians, Greece and Trojans, and the Trojan horse. How in the world could you have a horse into your gates? Never saw it before, never imagined it before. You couldn't think of people would like drop it. We say, oh, it's so obvious. Bring a horse in, drops out. We say, oh, it's so obvious. Guy stretches out his arms in love. No, it wasn't obvious. Why? Because the kingdom of darkness knows nothing of love. The kingdom of darkness only knows worry. The kingdom of darkness only knows accumulate. The kingdom of darkness only knows barter. The kingdom of darkness only knows pulling people down. The kingdom of darkness only knows furthering my agenda. Somebody coming who didn't need to die laying down his life? What? Somebody coming who doesn't need to die, actually putting themselves on a cross to give me love? What? Somebody coming to love the unlovable? What? Somebody coming and dying on a cross and being placed into a grave out of love? Somebody doing that, getting inside of a grave for 3 days? What? Jesus not only pours out his life, pours his love out on a cross, gets placed into a grave, has a form of slavery himself for 3 days in a grave, dead, literally and historically coming back from the dead. But then he does this other crazy thing, where he actually makes it such that his spirit can be implanted into anybody who will receive. Just as he is freely given, he invites us to freely receive. Just as he has poured out his life for us, he has received my life, received my goodness, received my love, received my mercy. How does that happen? Sometimes it happens when somebody is in a church and walks an aisle and says a prayer. Sometimes it happens when someone is just struck and they say a prayer. Sometimes it happens when someone doesn't say any prayer. They just receive and say, I get it. I just want to receive. The good one, God himself, came down, loosed from heaven to come down here, comes down here, binds all that is wrong, dies, pours himself out. And today, that same dynamic is still waiting for you. It's still available to you. The great key, the key of love, wants to insert himself into your life, wants to give you his spirit. He wants to come down and give you the keys to life. That's a lot of keys, but there actually should have been more. There actually should have been more. But here's what we're going to do. Sometimes there's a powerful thing when you just receive. And today, we want to give you the ability to receive a key. To receive a key. We want to give you that ability. And what we're going to do is we're going to do a song that you can soak in the words to. If there was any sort of spiritual moment in here, it is now gone. The gods are tinkling from heaven right now. Just kind of, there's one right there. Just, you know, I believe that laughter is one of God's emotions too. I do. Yeah, absolutely. There comes some more. Here they are. Come on now. All right. What we're going to do. Some of us, something struck you. You notice something. You notice something about how God wants to be involved in your life that you haven't before, or Jesus has, and he hasn't before, or you notice that he has been involved in your life, but you've fallen prey to the elemental slavery conditions of this world. We're going to do a song right now, and if you would like to come up to the edges of the stage right now and take a key which is signified for you receiving all that God has for you, you can do that. God, I pray right now that as people come forward and receive, that we would remember your love and that we would remember your goodness. I pray that this would be a holy, sacred moment for us to center ourselves on what it is that we want keys to, what it is. Why don't you just start this song, Robbie? And I want to be a reminder of the kingdom that you've been unlocked, that you've been freed. You've been freed no matter where you go. God's love is there already poured out on you. Whatever you're facing, however hard it is, Jesus has already faced it and gone through it. Whatever you're stressed about, God understands where that is, where it's going, and he wins. Love always wins. God, I'm praying that for those of us who've been freed for the first time, who've received you, Jesus, for the first time, who are seeing the kingdom for the first time, that things would be different, that they would be different, that we would sense your love in ways that we haven't previously, that we would be about giving your love in ways that we haven't been able to do previously. And for those of us who have again fallen prey to the pattern of the world, we want to declare to ourselves and you that no more, no more. We don't want to follow a counterfeit king any longer. We don't want to serve and expand a kingdom that ultimately doesn't matter. You're good, God. You're just good. You're good. You're loving. You're pure, you're understanding, you're patient, you're wise, you're good, you're faithful. You're a brilliant mastermind to lay down the plan that you enacted. Why don't we stand and sing this song one more time before we leave. You know, we do things around here, like creating keys that are supposed to fall from catwalks. We are creative in these ways. But, you know, the Bible nowhere says that, you know, you should go forward in a church. It actually doesn't. The idea of going forward in church is completely foreign, nowhere in the Bible at all. It's not a bad idea. It can be helpful. Absolutely, the Bible never says anything about dropping keys out of a catwalk. But one of the things that these keys signify that the Bible does talk about is being unlocked, of dying to your old kingdom. It's what's known as baptism. We have this Wednesday, a baptism service for a number of people that have already pre-signed up. It's what we're doing as a part of last Wednesday. And for some of you in here, you received the key, and you may be ready already to do the one thing that the Bible does talk about, to mark yourself as unlocked, and that is be baptized. If you want to do that, we'll see you here this Wednesday at 7 o'clock. Have a great weekend.